This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 24th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. More new revelations about waste and corruption at the BC legislature as the case is made for firing the clerk and the sergeant-at-arms who are already under police investigation. I get an update from Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Daryl Pluckus. I also interview Hawaii pro surfer Kayla Kennelly, who is one of nine women featured in the documentary She Is the Ocean. She Is the Ocean makes its Canadian premiere on February 24th at the Vancouver International Mountain Film Festival. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo Bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are we seeing Justin Trudeau's campaign for re-election come undone? Prime Minister Trudeau's plan coming into 2019 was to essentially run against Donald Trump, to make himself look like the most stable leader on either side of the 49th parallel. The question he was going to ask voters in October is whether they trust him to be Captain Canada, or whether they would rather see Conservative Andrew Scheer or the NDP's Jagmeet Singh in that role. In the past month, Trudeau lost Burnaby South by-election candidate Karen Wang after her WeChat scandal. Ambassador to China John McCallum was given the boot after he publicly meddled in the case of Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou, who awaits extradition to the U.S. After all that talk about respecting the rule of law and the separation of power. Then comes the SNC-Lavalin scandal, which led to Jody Wilson-Raybould's quitting cabinet. The Globe and Mail has reported that the ex-attorney general was pressured to cut a deal with SNC-Lavalin rather than let the Montreal engineering giant go through a corruption trial over millions of dollars of bribes paid to Libya under the Gaddafi regime. Canada waits for Wilson-Raybould to speak. She is hesitant to publicly do so because of solicitor-client privilege and cabinet confidentiality, which may or may not exist in this context. As Rafe Mayer said quite often, 6 weeks can be a lifetime in politics. So Trudeau could rebound, and SNC-Lavalin may finally face the music in court. But the evidence of the last month or so have left the Conservatives and the NDP with plenty of fodder for attack ads to remind voters this fall why they should not give the second Prime Minister Trudeau a second mandate. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is Around the Rim on the Breaker.News podcast. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Alice Yan reports, China's taste for worms is killing the soil. A taste for earthworms, which have a similar flavor to pork belly, is putting the health of China's soils at risk, and a legal loophole means there is little authorities can do to prevent the practice. The problem is the method used to catch the worms, as demonstrated by a group of men from Guangdong province in southern China who were recently filmed using electrical currents to drive their prey to the surface. But with worms fetching around 15 won, or $2 US per kilogram, the warnings of experts appear unable to stop the practice. Some people are alleged to have made fortunes selling dissected and dried earthworms caught using the electricity method, and in some parts of China, farmers have admitted earthworms have become locally extinct. In the Japan Times, Kyoto News Service reports, as injuries hit record high, 80% of those hurt by deer in Nara Park are non-Japanese. The number of people injured by wild deer at Nara Park, a major tourist attraction in the city of Nara, has hit a record high of 200 in the current fiscal year, with non-Japanese, many of them tourists, accounting for some 80% of those wounded. The more than 1,000 deer that roam the park are designated as national treasures, and visitors can feed them with special crackers. Many of the injuries are believed to have occurred when tourists tried to take photos of themselves feeding the animals, often while teasing them, such as by holding the crackers out of reach. While injuries among non-Japanese continue to rise, those among Japanese have held steady. the number of foreign visitors to Nara Prefecture increased almost tenfold from 2012 to some 2.09 million in 2017. Between fiscal 2013 and fiscal 2017, a total of 10 people had suffered serious injuries. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast, featuring news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Rob Davis reports how corporate cash corrupted one of America's greenest states. Oregon's failure to regulate campaign cash has made it into one of the biggest money states in American politics. The flood of money creates an easy regulatory climate where industry gets what it wants again and again. Companies and industry groups contributed $43 million to winning candidates in elections from 2008 to 2016, nearly half the money legislators raised. Organized labor, single-issue groups, and individual donors did not come close. Campaign money helped Oregon politicians do more than win election. It paid for luxury hotel rooms in Canadian chateaus, weekly visits to the local sports bar, and a variety of wearable Apple accessories. It bought roses for senators' desks, candy for Capitol offices, and framed art to hang on the walls. A century ago, Oregon became a pioneer in campaign finance reform. It limited campaign contributions and enacted the nation's first public campaign subsidy, allowing candidates to publish statements for free in a pamphlet distributed to voters. In 1973, with Watergate-inspired political reforms underway nationwide, Oregon lawmakers voted to limit how much candidates could spend in an election instead of how much they could raise. 2 years later, the Oregon Supreme Court said the spending limits violated Oregon's constitutional free speech protections. That left the state with no controls. In the Bellingham Herald, Robert Mittendorf reports, "What does your toilet paper choice mean for Mother Earth?" Stand.Earth's report gets to the bottom of a controversy that especially targets Procter & Gamble as among the worst for using trees clear-cut in the boreal forest of North America. In partnership with the Natural Resources Defense Council, Stand ranked toilet paper products with a grade of A, B, D, and F. Among the best with an A grade are products like Green Forest, 365 Bath Tissue, and Trader Joe's Bath Tissue. Swirling down the drain with a big fat F as the worst products are household names including Charmin Ultra Soft, Kirkland Signature, Angel Soft, Quilted Northern, and Up Soft and Strong. And in the Breaker.News, we reported on these headlines this week. Choosing not to resign in the wake of scandal meant a $74,000 windfall from taxpayers for ex-BC Liberal staffer. We exposed exclusively how Evan Southern, the BC Liberal Party's operations director in 2017, scored a $74,000 severance when the NDP replaced the BC Liberals in power. NDP's new budget gives millions more for government ads and the legislature. Finance Minister Carol James delivered her third budget. She forecasts a $274 million surplus in the 2019-2020 fiscal year. James and the NDP gave another $2.4 million to the Government Communications Department and $6 million more to the legislature, despite the waste and corruption scandal unearthed by Speaker Darrell Plekis. But the NDP only gave $200,000 extra to the office that regulates casinos, amid the money laundering scandal. You can find those stories behind those headlines, plus more in the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. More revelations from the British Columbia legislature, which remains under a cloud of waste and corruption that Speaker Darrell Plekis wants to solve. The Legislative Assembly Management Committee disregarded the pleas of a lawyer for suspended Craig James and Gary Lenz and released a second report by Plekis on February 21st. This one is a rebuttal to James and Lenz's error-filled explanations after the Speaker's bombshell report in January. Said Plekis in the new report, "These are very highly paid senior officers, and the legislature and the public are entitled to absolutely scrupulous conduct from them that does not undermine the trust placed in them and the dignity and reputation of the Legislative Assembly. Perhaps these officers believe what they are telling themselves about the significance of what they were doing, but the clerk and sergeant-at-arms are not dignitaries. Neither is the speaker. The new Plekis report also cites an exclusive story by the Breaker.News about the August 2017 whale-watching junket and trip to a Seattle Mariners baseball game that was disguised as a disaster preparation conference. Plekis found that little or no spending by the duo was necessary for their jobs. Clerk James was the general manager of the legislature, and Lenz the director of operations and director of security. Their jobs were to operate and maintain the seat of government, and to conduct meetings in the House and committee rooms. Asked Plekis in the new report, "Why are these positions so lacking in accountability and oversight compared to the conduct of employees and officials working elsewhere in government? Why are these officers traveling all over the world like dignitaries, spending enormous amounts of money and justifying it all by their bare assurances that their events were useful?" For years, James and Lenz got away with overspending, until Plekis exposed them. The NDP government is supposed to add the legislature to the Freedom of Information Law as early as this spring. As for Lenz and James, the committee voted to find a retired court judge to investigate whether James and Lenz should keep their jobs. The RCMP and two special prosecutors continued to investigate James and Lenz, who were suspended November 20th. The Breaker.News got an update on the next steps from Plekis' chief of staff, Alan Mullen.
Well, what's next is Lamsey made the decision and through motion that they were going to have a retired judge come on and essentially look at, not start a new investigation, but essentially look at all the information that has been presented to date. So that information would include, obviously, both Plekis reports. It would include the replies and information from Lenz and James and any other supporting documentation. And what that is for is for this retired judge, a fresh set of eyes, to just look at that information and give his or her opinion and his or her recommendation to Lamsey or ultimately the Legislative Assembly. Now, the Speaker has recused himself from that, and what that means is he's saying, I've done my reports. If you want to know what I think, it's in the report. But I'm going to let this retired judge now come in and have a look. It's a short process. It's not a new investigation. It's just looking at it with a fresh set of eyes. So that's going to be the next step here.
The new Plekis report also tells us that Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz spent $11,000 in December 2011 on executive first-class round-trip airfare to London, where he bought $1,100 worth of souvenirs, including Christmas pudding. The report goes in-depth about trips and souvenir shopping in exotic locales, including Sri Lanka. It adds fuel to the fire for their firing.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's up to the 87-member Legislative Assembly to determine and decide whether that employment relationship should be ended. But, I mean, I think those exotic trips are opening the eyes of British Columbians to the fact of, hang on for a second here, this has nothing to do with business continuity any more than, you know, a watch has to do with part of the uniform. I think it's very clear where the Speaker and I stand on this. How much more information do you need? This is at the point now where it's egregious, and I think British Columbians are looking at it saying, look, this is the same collection, a small collection of delegates or people that are going on these trips time after time after time, the same names on the paper, time after time after time, for the same purpose. Well, how many times you need to learn to ride a bike? It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to the Speaker, and I don't think it makes sense to the average British Columbian. Now, whether these individuals should ultimately have their employment terminated, I think British Columbians are pretty clear in their views, but ultimately that is a decision of the House. They are appointed at the pleasure of the House, and they must be removed at the pleasure of the House.
The new report also found a $370 check for two truckloads of booze delivered by Craig James personally to the ex-speaker Bill Barisoff in Penticton.
First off, why is the highest presiding officer, highest paid officer of the Legislative Assembly, delivering anything, tables, chairs, liquor, or anything for that matter. I mean, it's not in his job description to be making deliveries. That's number one. Number two, you know, why is a former speaker or a former member of any leaning purchasing anything from the Legislative Assembly? That doesn't make sense. And the other thing that's troubling from this latest report is, you know, changing stories. You've got three different stories. You've got the Sergeant at Arms saying, yes, I saw this this liquor being loaded, but I thought it was being returned. Then you've got the former speaker saying, well, I never received anything. And then you've got the clerk saying, well, yeah, I brought a small amount and I received a check for it. Well, which story is correct? And then you've got some folks saying, oh, yeah, I loaded the truck all right. And by the way, I loaded it a second time. Well, that quantity does not translate into $370 in any way, shape, or form. So to say it's inappropriate on multiple levels is a gross understatement, I feel.
None of this would have seen sunlight had it not been for Speaker Daryl Plekis blowing the whistle. And he does mention in the report that Auditor General Carol Bellringer gave clean audits to the legislature, but she never went to the effort that he did to take a microscope to the spending and how James and Lenz were signing off on their own expenses, living a life without the pressure of the Freedom of Information Law over their shoulders.
I mean, I can't speak to, you know, the Auditor General or former Auditor Generals or what was or was not done. But, I mean, both Dr. Plekis and I, coming from law enforcement backgrounds, you know, both of us did not have to be in that building very long to say, okay, this requires further attention here. This is something here just is not right. And something here remains not right. And we have a responsibility to British Columbians to continue to, you know, peel back the layers of the onion. There's lots more parts to this story, and we're going to continue to tell the story, you know, as best we can and when we can. I mean, it's going to be in pieces, obviously, but we just want to make sure that we are so on the side of right here and that we are doing the right thing for the right reason. And the single right reason is for the betterment of British Columbians.
Those were excerpts from my interview with Ellen Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker of the British Columbia Legislature, Daryl Plekis. Stay with the Breaker.News and the Breaker.News podcast in the weeks and months to come as we keep following the scandal at the British Columbia Legislature. The 2019 edition of the Vancouver International Mountain Film Festival is on now. The festival, under the leadership of Alan Fermanek, launched in 1998 in North Vancouver. It is now 10 days of celebrating mountain film, sports, and culture, until March 3rd. One of the featured attractions is the Canadian premiere of She is the Ocean, a documentary by Russian director Ina Blokhina about nine women from the four corners of the planet, all united by a love of the ocean. Catch the film February 24th at the Rio Theatre in Vancouver. It is also screening March 1st at the Royal Canadian Legion in Tofino, Canada's surfing capital, and it is back in Vancouver on March 8th, which is International Women's Day, for a screening at the Van City Theatre. One of the nine women featured in She is the Ocean is Hawaii-born pro surfer, actress, and DJ Kayla Kennelly. Kennelly turned pro in 1995 and won the Triple Crown in Hawaii in 2003. She appeared as herself in the movie Blue Crush. She was a 2016 ESPY finalist for Best Action Sports Athlete. I spoke to her by Skype from Hawaii.
What do you hope She is the Ocean means to the audience or achieves for women in water sports, adventure sports, and scientific pursuits of the ocean?
Well, you know, I really love the way that the film ended with Sylvia Earle speaking about, you know, kind of where we're headed if we don't change our ways. So I liked that environmental aspect at the end. But I just think, you know, it's the ocean is such a beautiful thing, and it's just so important. We all love the ocean. It's just so important that we all work to maintain it.
Now, you've got experience as a professional surfer on the World Championship Tour and the X Games. It's going to be a turning point for the sport next year, the Tokyo Olympics. Surfing is going to debut as an Olympic sport. What are your hopes for the sport when it does get on the world stage in the Olympics?
I just hope that they get really good surfing conditions. You know, that's the thing that's really tricky about surfing and probably why it hasn't been in the Olympics thus far is that, you know, all the other sports, you can kind of build a course, you can build a field, you can build a stadium. And with surfing, you can't really build the setup for, well, now, I mean, they can with the wave tanks and stuff like that, like the Kelly Slater wave pool. But if they're not going to have it in a wave pool, you know, you're relying on ocean swells and conditions and Mother Nature to cooperate, and she doesn't always cooperate. So I'm hoping that they get some really good waves and some good conditions so that the athletes can really show their stuff.
Who are the women that people around the world should be watching out for next year? Of course, they have to qualify before actually competing, but who are the women that are making names for themselves now on the way to Tokyo?
I think the, you know, all the women on the WCT tour, the Carissas, the Stephanie Gilmores, you know, the ones that are standouts in the WSL World Championship Tour events.
Mm-hmm. And this is also an interesting time in women's sport generally. I mean, down in California, there's a move afoot in the legislature, the Equal Pay for Equal Play campaign, to mandate equal prize money for sport competitions held on state land. And it's actually skateboarders and surfers who are really leading the way to in this push. Why do you think it's surfers and skateboarders that are being this active? Is it just the culture of those sports?
Well, actually, I mean, there was a really cool article that came out in the New York Times this month about the equal pay that the Committee of Equity in Women's Surfing, basically myself, Andrea Muller, Bianca Valenti, Paige Alms, formed a committee along with Sabrina, who's an activist, and Karen, who's our pro bono lawyer. And we fought to get that equal pay. And now that equal pay that we got, it was basically fought over at Mavericks. The event at Mavericks is kind of where we drew the line in the sand and fought and won equal pay. And now that's kind of been a catalyst for this new bill that's on the floor in California to require that all prize money on state grounds is equal for both men and women. So I'm really proud that to be a part of that, and that our little group of big wave surfers was a catalyst for that huge change.
For more information on the Vancouver International Mountain Film Festival, go to vimff.org. Go to sheistheocean.com for more information on the documentary. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Mitch Muir, the volunteer firefighter who rescued two boys from icy Oxbow Lake in Coquitlam on February 21st. As this February's winter blast continues in the West Coast, be careful near lakes and be careful in the backcountry, where avalanches have claimed the lives of two people last week. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 24th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 24th in 1942, in the wake of the attack on Pearl Harbor, the Canadian government cabinet used its power under the War Measures Act to remove all persons of Japanese origin from their homes and place them in inland internment camps? The internment lasted until the end of the Second World War. In 1988, Prime Minister Brian Mulroney apologized, and survivors were given $21,000 each for redress. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.